Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Chof Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah that you find at the top of Daf Chof Zayin. On the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading, which we indicate goes till Omid Beis. We have a rather long topic ahead of us. Nishba Levatel or Lekayim is HaMitzvah. Someone who swears to either not fulfill or swears to fulfill a mitzvah. The Mishnah. Nishba levatel is a mitzvah. Velo bitel, potter. Man swore to violate a mitzvah, to, let's say, not fulfill a mitzvah, and yet he did fulfill it. He didn't mevatel it. Potter, he is exempt, meaning he's not considered as having violated a shvuas bitui. Lekayim velo kiyem, a person swore to fulfill a mitzvah and didn't fulfill it. Potter, he is exempt. He has not violated the rules of shvuos. Shehoya bedin sheichayev kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Logically, bedin indicates often logically, one should have been chayev for violating this oath, and yet he's not. But the argument here is, in terms of logic, he should have been chayev in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, who actually holds that he is in violation. If he swears to fulfill a mitzvah and doesn't fulfill it, he is considered having violated the oath, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. And now we see his position presented in the Mishnah, and later the response of the Rabbanan. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Ma'im ha-reshus she'eno mushba alav mehar Sinai, harehu chayav alav. Mind you, in the realm of reshus, that which is optional, you have the option to eat the sandwich, to not eat the sandwich, you're not bound from Sinai, from the giving of the Torah, to necessarily eat the sandwich. And if you swear to eat the sandwich and don't eat it, so you're in violation of the Shavuos Bitui. Mitzvah, a commandment, a precept, Shumushba Oleo Mehar Sinai, you're bound to fulfill it. In other words, determination or import in the fulfillment of a mitzvah, eino din she'chayev aleha, all the more so if you swear to fulfill it, you should have to fulfill it, and if you don't, you're in violation of the oath that you took. Amru lo lo, the Rabbanan responded to Rabbi Becerra and said, not so. Imamris b'shvuas horishus, if you say that an optional realm can create a binding oath, shekein osa bo lav kehein. In the realm of the optional, you can take an oath both in the negative, I won't do something, or in the positive, I will do something. Toimar b'shvuas mitzvah shelo osa bo lav kehein. Not so in the case of shvuas mitzvahs. There is a limitation. We don't find that the negative is like the positive. Shem nishba levatel v'lo bitel poter. If a person, let's say, swore to mevatel a mitzvah, swore not to put on tefillin, and he didn't fulfill his oath, and he put on the tefillin, he would be exempt. And everyone agrees with that a shvur levatel semitzvah cannot be made, because there you are contradicting the Torah's command. And an oath that stands in diametric opposition to the Torah's command, that doesn't get started. So you find in the realm of mitzvos, shvua limitations. And therefore, even the shvua to fulfill a mitzvah and not, and if you don't fulfill it, you will be considered exempt according to the Rabbanan. And now we have a Tanaic source which presents the same topic matter, but is more elaborate, as is often the case with Brisas in contrast to the Mishnah. On the side, before we start the actual text, we have a Mivneh structural note. You'll notice a house shape, and the point sometimes faces upwards, and sometimes it faces downwards. So when the point is facing upwards, Yochol Yehei Chayav, the thrust of the brisa will be to say, should I think that you are in violation? Tamud lomar poter. So and the result will be exemption. The opposite is in the case when you see the inverted house, where the thrust is thinking exemption, and then the final analysis will be guilt. Tanu Rabbanan. We turn to the text. Yochol nishba levatel es hamitzvah velo bitel yechayev. Could it be that one who swears levatel es hamitzvah, to abrogate, to avoid fulfillment of a mitzvah, and doesn't avoid it, in other words, he fulfills the mitzvah, is he going to be guilty of having violated his oath to mevatel the mitzvah? And let us add, and thereby be considered a fulfillment of the pasuk of Haro'o, the pasuk that is cited now, Talmud Lomar Lohara Lehitiv. Lohara is an expression that can mean deprivation, detriment, and Lehitiv is an expression that means to benefit, to increase, to bestow. So the thinking, the initial thinking is that maybe one who swears to abandon or to void fulfilling the mitzvah is considered a binding oath. Talmud lomar lahora lehitiv, ma hatova rishus, af haro rishus. Now there's an expression here that will have to be clarified later, but in the meantime, we're working with an assumption. And that is just like Hatova is something that's Rishus in the realm of the optional as opposed to the commandments. Afharo, so to the element of deprivation or cancellation, of detriment, is Rishus, is limited to the realm of the optional. Therefore, the suggestion of a Shvur Levatel as a mitzvah does not fall in the category of Shvuas Bitui, the category of uttered oaths that are that are otherwise binding. We continue. Oitzi nishba levatel hamitzvah lo bitel shu poter. So I'll exclude from the realm of binding oaths an oath to void mitzvah fulfillment and then non-fulfillment of the oath by not abandoning the mitzvah. Yochel nishba lekayim es hamitzvah velo kiyem sheichayav. Could it be one who swears to fulfill a mitzvah, and that would be called hatova, something beneficial, and in reality he doesn't mekayim? Is he then considered in violation of his oath to mekayim the mitzvah? Talmud lomar lahora lehitiv. The same pasuk is quoted. Ma haro'o rishus. Just like haro'o, deprivation, is in the realm, or limited to the realm of the optional, af hatova rishus, so too, hatova is limited to the realm of rishus, the optional. Oitzi nishba lekayim es hamitzvah lo kiyem shu poter. Mitzvahs are not rishus, they're not optional, they're commandments. So, therefore, one who swears to fulfill a mitzvah and ends up not fulfilling it is exempt. Because the pasuk clearly is a reference to the realm of the optional. The pasuk, when we speak about the pasuk, means the pasuk that determines what constitutes a binding shvua. Shvua's bitui, an uttered oath. Yochel, could it be nishba lehara leatzmo velo hera? Person who swears to deprive himself of something. He swears not to eat a sandwich, and he doesn't deprive himself. Yochel yehi poter? Would you think that he should be exempt? Tamud lomer lo ra'u lehitiv. Ma hatova rishus, af hara rishus. Ovi nishba lehara liatzmo velo hera. Shom rishus biyado. Just like hatova is something of an optional nature, so too the realm of harov, deprivation, is in the realm of that which is optional. And therefore, someone who swears not to eat the sandwich, that's an example of harali atzmo, and he doesn't fulfill that, and he eats it, he is guilty. It's rishus biyado, it's within his power. It's something that he has... he has the right to decide. This, of course, is in contrast to the realm of mitzvos. Yochol, could it be nishba lohara leachirim velo hara shei chayav? Could it be someone who swears to be detrimental to others and isn't thus? Would he be in violation? Someone swears to hurt others, and he ends up not hurting them. Is he then guilty of violating his oath? Talmud lomar lohara lehitiv. Ma tovo rishus af hara rishus. Otsi, I will exclude nishba lohara lecher velohara she'ein harishus biyado. The realm of shvuas bitui is that which you have the option of doing. That you have rishus, so you have a permission to do. To the exclusion of that is one who swears to hurt others. He doesn't have the right to do that. And therefore, if one swore to do thusly and doesn't fulfill his oath, he's not guilty of violating an oath because the oath doesn't get off the ground. Minayin l'rabois hatovas acherim? From where do I know to include one who swears to benefit others? Talmud lomar oy lehitiv. So that this word oy is an extra word, and it's here to include as a binding oath one who swears to benefit others. V'yei zohi haras achirim. What would be an example of hurting others? Someone who swears, Akes moichoyu ve'eftzas mocho. Akes ploni ve'eftzas mocho. Someone who swears to hit so-and-so or to smash his skull. So someone who swears to do that and doesn't do it is not considered in violation of his oath. The Gemara asks, what is the basis of the assumption that we've been making all along? And that's what we're labeling this section of the Gemara under our Nosei heading as the Hemshech, the continuation of the topic above. Mimai de posik shalaloitiv bedovar rishus ksivi. How do you know that it's the posik that defines what constitutes a shvuas bitui and a binding oath of utterance? How do you know that it's dealing with the realm of the optional? Mimai dekroi bedvar rishus ksivi. Dilma bidvar mitzvah ksivi. Maybe the pasuk is talking within the realm of mitzvos, and that an oath to either fulfill or not fulfill a mitzvah is a binding oath. The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a new marking, the trapezoid shape, and it's featured on the side under the mivneh heading. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature. The narrow part of the trapezoid or volcano shape facing up in this case represents tshuvos, responses, and the inverted represents questions. So we raised the question for how do you know that the lahara leitiv is a reference to the optional? So we answer with a long answer, lo salka daitach. The bo'inon hatova dumyo daharo vaharo dumyo daharo. We need to have a reflexive relationship where what we say with regard to hatova, we can say also regard to haro and vice versa. The akish haro la'tova. The Torah compares the, we'll call it the detrimental to the beneficial. Ma hatova eino bebitol mitzvah. Just like hatova, a person swears to eat something, is not going to result in the voidance of a mitzvah. Af haro'o eino bebitol mitzvah. So to hara, for example, someone swears not to eat, cannot be in the realm of the voidance of a mitzvah. For example, we said hara is an oath, or someone swears not to eat. So just like the positive side, swearing to eat, doesn't result in bittul mitzvah, it's not in the realm of mitzvah, so too the oath of not eating is not the bittul mitzvah. For example, someone swears not to eat on Yom Kippur. So why is that the case? Hara gufa, that hara, that deprivation, someone swearing not to eat on Yom Kippur, that hara itself, hatovahi, is actually something positive. So that in the realm of mitzvahs, I don't find a case where I'll have hara in addition to hatovah. Ve'akish hatovah lahara. And likewise, let's compare hatovah to hara. Mahara eino b'kiyu mitzvah, the oath to not eat doesn't result in the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Af hatova eino b'kiyu mitzvah. So too, hatova would have to be that kind of, like the oath to eat, let us say, will not be in the realm of the fulfillment of a mitzvah. Hatova gufo harohi. The hatova itself is considered detrimental. Now here we must pause and take a look at the Rashi for much fuller explanation than that which we offered. The Rashi that we're looking at, you will find the Rashi a quarter of the way down from the top, approximately, in the Rashi column. She'eino bebitol mitzvah. The Gemara had pointed out that just like hatova, the positive, does not result in bittul mitzvah. Just skip the bracketed two lines for a second. Elo b'kiyu mitzvah. Once again, we're from the beginning of the Rashi, she'eino b'bittul mitzvah, elo b'kiyu mitzvah, kagon ochel matzah b'lele pesach. Okay, now we'll read the Rashi again from the beginning. Hatova, that which is positive, like one who swears to eat something. She'eino b'bittul mitzvah. Kagon, ochel, b'yom ha-kippur. Imagine someone would swear to eat on Yom Kippur. Oh, chomeis pesach. Swear to eat on eat leavened on Pesach. Dehar lo kori hatova. You wouldn't call that positive. Sharei goreim ra l'nafsho. You're causing bad to befall your spirit. So hatova is not bebitul mitzvah. Hatova means something that's positive, that's beneficial. Elo b'kiyu mitzvah, kagon Ochel matzah b'leile Pesach. Someone were to swear to eat matzah Pesach Eve. Af haro'o delo ochel. So by the same token, the deprivation of non-eating she'eno b'bitul mitzvah kagon lo ochel matzah. It could not be the oath of deprivation of not eating could not possibly be a vow not to eat matzah. Ella b'kiyum mitzvah. Just like hatova has to be b'kiyum mitzvah, so too harah, namely the non-eating, would also be kiyum mitzvah, the fulfillment of a mitzvah, kagon lo ochel chametz. Person swears not to eat chametz. Well, in kain loma li dekosvo haharah. And why, if the Torah was referring to the realm of mitzvahs, why bother even writing the word harah? Hatova he le'inyan mitzvah. The harah meaning non-eating. A person were to swear not to eat chametz. Well, that deprivation is actually positive. It's hatova. And the Hakosva, the Torah already wrote Lahitiv. So, from that standpoint, the Torah we're showing how the Torah, when it speaks about Lahara Lahitiv, cannot be in the realm of mitzvahs. And likewise, the Akish, we continue with the Rashi, the Akish Hatov Lahara, Ma Hara De Lo Ochel. Lo harah means deprivation. A person swears not to eat. She'eino b'kiyu mitzvah. Kagon lo ochel chometz b'pesach. That would not be harah if a person swears not to eat chometz on Pesach. They eat lo harah mikri linyan mitzvah. That wouldn't be called harah. So, just like we're comparing Hatova Tarah. So just like Harah cannot be the fulfillment of a mitzvah, Av Hatova de Elchal, Hatova meaning the positive of eating, Sheino b'kiyu mitzvah could go an Ochel Matzah. It wouldn't be an oath of someone swearing to eat matzah, Elo b'bitul mitzvah could go an Ochel Chomes b'Pesach. Vim Kain, Hatova Zu, positive aspect, positive action of eating, harahi, that is negative for kosva, and harah is already written out. So the result of this analysis is that I'm unable to compare within the realm of mitzvahs hatova taharah and harah tahatova. Because, as we said, in the realm of hatova, meaning an oath to eat something, in the realm of mitzvahs, so that cannot be described as an eating that would result in the voidance of a mitzvah. The equivalent in non-eating can also not be something that would result in the voidance of a mitzvah. But once you get to that point, a non-eating that does not result in the voidance of a mitzvah essentially is hatova. So I don't have any example of hara'a at all that could be compared to hatova in the realm of mitzvahs. And the same thing is in the reverse, where in the realm of hara'a, which represents deprivation of non-eating, and if it's to be considered rav, if it's to be considered bad, so it can't be something that results in the fulfillment of a mitzvah. So just like the harah is not something in the fulfillment of the mitzvah, the hatava spoken about is also not in the fulfillment of the mitzvah. So if you have an eating that is not in the fulfillment of the mitzvah, of a mitzvah, so that you have essentially something that's negative. So why even bother writing it out? There's, once the hatova just described, the hatova that doesn't result in the kiyum of a mitzvah is itself negative, and that's already alluded to by the word harah. The Gemara asks, "Well, ihachi bedvar harushus nami lo mishkachas lo." This is extremely terse. So we go to the Rashi, who is very elaborate on this. Rashi, where we left off, hachi garsinon ihachi bedvar harushus nami lo mishkachas lo. Elo midi itzrich oi le rabbi satovas achirim shmamino. Lav bidvar mitzvah ksivi v'chule, and that will all be explained. V'hochi pirusha. Ihochi, Rashi says, bidvar horoshus nami ikolak shieki haigavno. If you're going to analyze lahara lahitiv to exclude mitzvahs using the analysis that we just got finished explaining, you're going to run into a similar problem in the realm of rishus. And here Rashi spells it out. Akish haro latova. Compare deprivation to beneficial. Ma hatova da'oichel. Skipping the brackets for a moment in the Rashi. Dover hamina hanehu. Just like the hatova, the positive of eating, must be something that benefits you. You're eating something beneficial to you. Well, af haro da'oichel, so to the deprivation both of non-eating would have to have the same characteristic, though. She'ein shvuzu ra legufo elo hatova, something that's not bad for you, but rather good. Kagon lo ochel dvar makoshen leguf. Example, someone would swear not to eat things that are bad for your body. V'im kein haro hazos hatovi, that deprivation itself is good. V'hok siv le hatova, but hatova was already stated. So you'd have a case of extreme redundancy. Let's go over. We skipped a few lines in the Rashi. Go back to the double underline that you see. Akish haro lahatova. Ma hatova di oichel. Just like hatova of swearing to eat something. She'eino bedovar ra lagufo. If you're swearing to eat something, you're not swearing to eat something bad for yourself. Eating something that's bad for your body wouldn't be considered hatova at all. Rather, you're swearing to eat something that is beneficial. So af haro, so by comparing haro to hatova, it has to, of what's the haro of deprivation, the lo ochel, the haro of non-eating, it would have to be comparable to hatova, where you're swearing not to eat something that is bad, but rather good. Kagon lo ochel dvorim hakoshim leguf. You'd have to be swearing not to eat something that's harmful. V'im kein, if that's what your oath is, haro hazois hatovihi lo, that's actually beneficial for you, not to eat poison. V'hok sifle hatova, but hatova has already been stated. The Torah already reveals oaths that are beneficial through lahativ. So that you find here a problem of redundancy, even in the realm of optional oaths. And likewise, v'akish hatov l'hara. Try to compare that which is beneficial to that which is negative. Now, when we say beneficial, it would mean an oath to eat. Hatova hara, an oath not to eat. So, ma hara delo oichel, the hara, the oath of deprivation of not eating, lo nishba al dovar hakoshe. In order for us to fulfill the intent of hara, you'd have to be swearing not to eat something that otherwise would be good for you. So you're swearing not to eat something beneficial. It couldn't be swearing not to eat something harmful, because that wouldn't be called hara, that wouldn't be called negative. So you'd have to be swearing not to eat something that's beneficial. Af hatova di oichel, so too, the hatova, the oath to yes eat, kagon shinishba bedova ra loy. You'd have to be swearing to eat something bad for you. Shetei shvua ra lo. So the result would be that the shvua is bad, in Kein Hatova Gufa Harohi. Well, in that case, then the Hatova of yes eating is actually bad. And that, again, would be a redundancy, because the Torah already says Lahora. So how do we know that the Torah in Lahora Lahitiv is talking about the realm of option and not the realm of mitzvahs? The Gemara answers, Ela midi'itzterich oi l'rabois hatovas achirim. You can see this was quoted from the source above. Use your arrows to navigate. So as we said above, that the word oi in the pasuk lahara oi lahitiv, the word oi is coming to include someone who swears to benefit others. Shma mino bedover rishus ksivi. This shows us that the basic pasuk lahara lahitiv is in the realm of the optional. Dehi sakadaita bedvar mitzvah ksivi. If you were to think that the mitzvah is, that the pasuk is talking within the realm of mitzvos, and lahara ulahitiv, lahara then would mean if hatova sacherim is the subject of lahativ, so what's hara mean? Hara sacherim. Well, hashto hara sacherim is rabbi. In the realm of mitzvos, to hurt others. If you're going to say that Lahara Lativ is not in the realm of option, but in the realm of mitzvahs, so you're telling me then to hurt others is Israbi, means is included as being a binding oath. Hatova Sachera Mibaya, would I have to go out of my way to tell me about helping others, benefiting others? Why does the Torah have to go out of its way to tell me, Oi, L'Rabbi Hatova Sacherim, when Haro would be Haro Sacherim? So the fact is that the Torah is not dealing with the realm of mitzvahs; it's dealing with the realm of that which is strictly optional, and therefore haroah sacherim is not something that's optional. You don't have the right to hurt others. Therefore, the O of the Torah, which is an expression of kro yisera, going out of its way to include hatova sacherim as being a binding oath, that shows me that the basic pasuk is talking about the realm of the optional. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice this is a long question, and it takes us to the top line of Omid Beis. The Gemara asks, "V'hai oy mi bayale lechalek?" But do I not need the word oy for a totally separate purpose? And it's not coming l'rabois hatova sacherim, but it's coming to tell me that a shvua of a shvuas between nature is such if you swear either to deprive or to benefit. Without the word oi, the pasuk would have said l'hara ulahatif. That a person that an oath would be an oath only if you swear both to eat something and to not eat something. Only if you take an oath that's both in the positive and the negative would that be considered a binding oath. Well, therefore, is the word "o" is used up? It's there l'chalek to make it to separate. That a binding oath is binding either or, whether it's a positive oath, an oath to eat something, or a negative oath, an oath not to eat something. The Gemara says, L'chalek lo tzorich kra. You don't really need a pasuk for separation. The Gemara responds to that, well, ha'nichal Rabbi Yonason, that might be something you can say as far as the Tana Rabbi Yonason is concerned, Ela Rabbi Yoshia Mayikul Amemar, but according to Rabbi Yoshia, you do need a special pasuk to indicate separateness. When you see two expressions in the Torah, you don't automatically understand separateness. Separateness has to be spelled out. This is what we call the approach of Rabbi Yoshia. And we have a long bracketed section Use your bracket length indicator. See how much to skip for a moment. So in the meantime, the question is, and this is why we have a long question, to indicate that according to Rabbi Yoshia, is it not so that the word oi, lahara oi lahatif of the pasuk, the word oi is needed for separating, that one will be bound by an oath if it's either or, whether it's in the positive or the negative? The Gemara will say at the top of Omid Beis, Afilu Tema Rabbi Yoshia. The source above that said Oy is available. L'rabois Hatovas Acherim is something that even Rabbi Yoshia could accept. And we'll explain that at greater length when we get to the Gemara at the top of Omid Beis. In the meantime, though, the Gemara gives us background. Background for Rabbi Yoshia. Well, we'll see in this source that we're quoting now, both Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonasan, where we're going to emphasize that Shitas Rabbi Yoshia is you need a special scriptural reference to indicate separateness, without which I will automatically understand two points that are mentioned as being together, without which you don't have a fulfillment of whatever the verse is talking about. Desanya. The pasuk, the topic that this pasuk introduces has to do with one who curses his mother or his father. The pasuk says, "Isha shir yikalel es aviv ve'es imoi." That's the beginning of the pasuk. "Ein li ela aviv ve'imo." Had I had this, "Isha shir yikalel es aviv ve'es imo," I would have thought that cursing parents is a violation only if one curses both of them, his father and his mother. Aviv v'lo imo, imo v'lo aviv minayin. From where do I know that even if he curses one of them, father without cursing mother, or cursing mother without cursing father, that he is guilty? Talmud lomar, aviv v'imo kileo. You notice with our markings, you have in both halves of the pasuk a reference to a parent. And you also have a reference to klola, to cursing. In the first half of the pasuk, the word yikalel is closer to aviv. In the second half of the pasuk, the word klola is closer to imo. This tells us aviv kileo, imo kileo, cursing either father or mother. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia, that's how Rabbi Yoshia knows that cursing one parent is enough to constitute a violation of this sin. Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Mashma Shneim Keechod Umashma Echod Bifnei Atzmo. As far as Rabbi Yonasan is concerned, when you read the pasuk, Ish Asher Yikalel Es Aviv Es Imo, he would not have thought at the outset to think both. It's true that you see Aviv and Imo mentioned in the pasuk, but that doesn't automatically mean to Rabbi Yonasan togetherness. As far as Rabbi Yonasan is concerned, separateness is understood even without, we'll say, the continuation of the pasuk with the seeming repetition at the end of the pasuk. You might ask, well, according to Rabbi Yonasan, why does the pasuk go on to say what it does at the end? So Rashi answers that particular question. So as far as Rabbi Yonasan is concerned, the word oi that we had before, lahara lahitiv, it's not necessary for lechalek. I don't need a special scriptural reference, because I don't assume things to be together anyway. But according to Rabbi Yoshia, unless you have a special scriptural reference, like you see here by cursing parents, I don't automatically assume things to be separate. We're going to be presenting then our question, according to Rabbi Yoshua, the word O is used up. How does Rabbi Yoshua know that O is l'rabois hatovas achirim? In the meantime, Rabbi Yonason says that I understand, even though they're stated together, I understand each one separately. Ad sheyifrot lo hakosuv yachdov. I'll understand separateness unless or until a pasuk specifies yachdov, togetherness. So, as far as Rabbi Yonason is concerned, togetherness in a scriptural reference would have to be spelled out. Otherwise, I assume separateness, each one on its own. But according to Rabbi Yoshia, I don't make assumptions like that. And therefore, I have the posuk lahara o lehetiv. The word o there is necessary for lechalek, for separateness. And if that's the case, so then I don't have a basis for oy lerabos hatovas achirim. And if I don't have that basis, so then the whole issue of how do I know definitively that the posuk is talking about the optional becomes a question. The Gemara answers, and notice we have a long answer here, Afilu Temo Rabbi Yoshia. And let's look at Rashi at the top line, Umeshani Rabbi Yoshia Delo Miyasir Le Oi. According to Rabbi Yoshia, where the word Oi does not appear to be extra available for the drosh of La'arabas Hatov Zacherim, but rather it's necessary for L'chalek. According to Rabbi Yoshua, where the word oi is not extra, nafka le dekroi lav b'mitzvah airi, he nevertheless has another way to reveal that the posuk by Shavuos bituv lahar lahetiv is not limited, it's not talking about the realm of mitzvahs. And we'll discover that by reading on in the Gemara, top line again, and notice this is a response to the question we had raised. Afilu Temo Rabbi Yoshia, the source that we had before in indicating that the realm of mitzvahs, or the realm of Shavuos, that is, and where it says Lahara Lehitiv, is not talking about mitzvahs, is something that Rabbi Yoshia can also understand, can also be in accordance with Rabbi Yoshia, even though the word oy is not available. V'sovar law k'Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yoshia will accept the Rabbi Akiva approach, the Dorish Ribui Umiuti, who darshins the psukim in the Ribui Umiut fashion. Now this, of course, is a reference to the Gemara that we had back on Daf Chof Vov. So if you have that available, you can see in the middle of the Omid, where we have in our Mark Gemaras, you can see with the diamonds, Rabbi Akiva darshan the psukim in the Ribu Yumiut fashion. What's the result of that? E Amris Bishlamo Bidvar Horoshus Ksiv. If you say that the realm of Shavuos, as was darshaned by Rabbi Akiva, is speaking about Shavuos concerning matters of option. Memayet Devar Mitzvah. And that, by the way, is something that we saw within the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that, and this, if you have Daf Chof Vav Amud Aleph, you can notice back there on the third of the wider type lines under the narrow lines in the middle of the Gemara, the Gemara pointed out, my miyeit devar mitzvah. So in the ribui umiut way of darshaning, of expounding on psukim, where in effect I say that Shavuos affect the realm of Rishus, mimayet devar mitzvah. So in the ribui umiut fashion that we elaborated on Dav Chovav, I have what to exclude, namely Shavuos concerning mitzvos. Eloi amris bidvar mitzvah ksiv. If you are going to say that lahara lahitiv includes the realm of mitzvos, then mimai komemai, what is there left to exclude? If we pick up with the Rashi that we started reading before, on the second line from the top, mai miyet, ein l'cho dover haroi l'mayet, kenishba levatel sa mitzvah. The imzeh chayev, if you're going to say that someone who swears to void fulfillment of a mitzvah is a binding oath, kol shekein kol shar shvuos, then all the more so, all other oaths in the realm of the option are certainly going to be binding. Elavadai bitol mitzvah imut, v'kiyum mitzvah mimit, nidalese balavahein. So rather, we have to conclude for the exclusionary expression in the pasuk to be effective in excluding something, it's got to exclude the realm of mitzvos. And it's with that then, as a result of Rabbi Yoshia darshaning like Rabbi Akiva, we're forced into the position that it's not, the pasuk of Lo'al Eitiv, the pasuk of Shvuas Bitui, is not referring to the realm of mitzvos, oaths concerning either the fulfillment or the voidance of a mitzvah. Omer Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Ma'im HaRashus V'chulei. In our Mishnah, we saw Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira arguing against the Chachamim with a Kal V'chomer. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira said, mind you, in the realm of Rashus, where you're not bound by Sinai to fulfill whatever it is because of its very nature, you're swearing to do something that's a matter of option. Something like the fulfillment of mitzvahs, where you're already bound by Sinai to fulfill the mitzvah, all the more so there is a sense of urgency that when you swear to fulfill the mitzvah, certainly that should be a binding oath. The Gemara says, V'rabbonon shapir ko amri lei l'Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. In that argument, we have to point out the Rabbanon had responded to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, and they said, how can you derive the realm of mitzvos from the realm of reshus, where in the realm of mitzvos, for example, you cannot swear, and even Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira concedes, you can't swear to void the fulfillment of a mitzvah. And just like you can't swear to void the fulfillment of a mitzvah, so the realm of Shvuas Bitui doesn't apply to mitzvos. As opposed to the realm of option, you can swear not to eat a sandwich. So the Gemara here is asking, is it not so that the Rabbanon have a very, very strong comeback to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira? So if Rabbanon shapir ko'am relay the Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, They have a very strong comeback showing how you can't make the Kal V'chomer that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira had made. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omar Loch. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira will respond, Otu Hatovas Achirim, the realm of benefiting others. Lav Afalgav, is it not so that Afalgav the lesser Bichlau haruas achim v'rovi rachmona. Everyone acknowledges that an oath to benefit others is binding, when at the very same time an oath to hurt others is not binding. So even though you don't have it in what we call the lav v'hein model, you don't have it with the ability to set it up in the positive and the negative, namely helping others, that's in the positive. That's a binding oath. You can't say, you can't have an oath to hurt others. That would be binding. So too, hachanami b'kiyu mitzvah. So say the same thing with regard to the fulfillment of mitzvahs. Afagab the lesse b'bito mitzvah. Even though it can't be stated in the negative, Rabbi Rachmana. The Torah is nevertheless including it as a binding oath. The Rabbanon, Hasam Ise below Etiv. Hacha mi Ise below Ekayim. The Rabbanon say that if you're trying to make your point with regard to Hatovas Acherim, and use it as an illustration that it can't be said in the negative, that isn't accurate. The vow of Hatovas Acherim can actually, yes, be said in the negative. You can swear to benefit others, and you can also swear not to provide that benefit to others. And that would be binding. Can you do the same thing with mitzvahs, though? Can you swear, on the one hand, to fulfill a mitzvah, and to swear likewise, I am not going to fulfill the mitzvah? That you can't swear, because that would be against the Torah. So the Rabbanon end up with their final response, negating Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra's attempt to argue that vows to fulfill mitzvahs are actually binding as a shvuas bitui. Before we continue with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading, Ribui Shvuos al Oisa Pu'ula. The example of multitude or repeat oaths over the same action. Do they take hold, the repeat oaths? The Mishnah. Shvuah shelo ochal kikar zu. Shvuah shelo ochleno. Shvuah shelo ochleno. Seems that there are three vows here, three oaths, not to eat the bread. V'ochla, and he went ahead and ate the bread. Eino chayov elo achas. He is considered in violation of only one oath. The idea being that once you are bound by the oath not to eat the bread, there is no room for the second oath to take hold. We call that ein shvua chola al shvua. Zuhi shvuas bitui shechayoven al zdoina makis v'al shigosa korbanoi levyoreit. What we've described till now is a shvuas bitui, an oath of utterance, concerning which one who violates it knowingly is subject to the punishment of lashing, and one who is unintentional, who is shogeg, is guilty of is obligated to bring a sin offering that's oilivere, means fluctuating price based on one's income, as the Torah provides. A man of means brings an animal offering, a man of less means, an impoverished individual, will bring a bird offering, two birds actually. Shvuas shav, a vain oath, chayov mazdoina makis v'ashigos apoter. If violated, if a vain oath is taken knowingly, intentionally, he is subject to the penalty of lashings. And if he is unintentional in his oath, he's exempt from bringing a sacrifice. Before going further, on the side we have an osei, a topic heading, Hashlachot, the ramifications, shel shinui seder b'shvuas. When there's a change in the order in which one vows. Shvua shaloi oichel, shvua shalo ochleno. Notice the change in language, in grammar. That's one situation, that's an order issue. He first swore shvua shalo ochal. He said shvua shalo ochal kikrazu. And then his second shvua is shalo ochleno. Grammatically, there is a seeming lack of difference, but when you look at it closely, there is a difference, and that's what we'll have to discuss in the Gemara. Number two, shvua shelo ochleno, shvua shelo ochal. Notice just the opposite order. What difference does it make? So now the Gemara. The Gemara opens up bearing in mind that in our Mishnah we saw multiple Shavuos eventually being violated and his being guilty over one, only the violation of only one. Loma li lemisni shvua shelo ochal shvua shelo ochleno. What's the purpose in teaching these two different forms? Would it could the Mishnah not have simply taught shvua shelo ochal shvua shelo ochal? The Gemara answers, ha komashmlan. The Mishnah is communicating the following. Taimo di Omar shaloi oichal v'hodar Omar shalo ochleno. De lo mechayev elochado. The reason that he, in violation of these oaths, is held responsible for only one. In other words, he'll only bring one sacrifice if it's unintentional. Why? Very much because of the order. When he swore shelo ochal, what did he swear? He swore he's not going to eat. What constitutes eating in halacha? The minimum size of eating, of the act of eating, generally speaking, is an olive quantity. So his initial oath was he swears not to eat even an olive quantity of bread. And then he swore, the second oath was, he's not going to shlo chleno. I'm not going to eat it. Now, eating it means the whole loaf. If a person swore in that order, first he swore not to eat even a kezias. So he is restricted from eating even an olive quantity right at the outset. So certainly he can't eat the whole thing. He's already restricted by the first vow. And we have a rule that Ein Shvua Chalal Al Shvua. The first vow precluded whatever he vowed in the second oath. Avol, the Gemara goes on, Avol Omar Shelo Ochleno. If his initial oath was, he swears not to eat the entire loaf. Now think about this. At that point, would he be in violation if he ate an olive quantity? He wouldn't be in violation. At that point, that he swore simply shelo ochleno, he is allowed to eat an olive quantity of bread. V'chodo Omar, and then he vowed, shelo ochal. If that would be the order, mechayev tarti, if he were to eat the whole loaf, he would be guilty of two oath violations. Kidarova, di Omar Rava, as we see in Rava's teaching, Shvua Shelo Ochal Kikrazu. Person swore not to eat, in that, using that language, Shelo Ochal Kikrazu. Kevan Shoacham Emena Kizayas Chaya, by eating an olive quantity, you're already guilty of violating the oath. Shelo ochleno, if a person swears using that term, eino chayov ad sheyochal es kula. He's not guilty until he eats the entire loaf. So as we explained, if the order would have been first shelo ochleno, there is room for the second vow to take hold, namely shelo ochal, which indicates the prohibition of eating a mere kezias. Therefore, when he eats the first kezias, so he's in violation of the second vow. When he finishes the entire bread, he would then be in violation of the first vow. So, as we have learned now in the last few lines, what the Mishnah is teaching us in its hidden fashion, is that it's all a matter of the order. And that is accomplished by changing the expression, where the opening expression was shelo ochal, and the subsequent expression was shelo ochleno, and the Mishnah teaches us he's chayav only one. from which we derive that if you switch the order, then he wouldn't be in violation of only one. There he would be in violation of two oaths upon eating the whole loaf. Continuing, Shvua Shelo Ochleno the Ochlo Eino Chayov Elo Achas. At this point in the Mishnah, we had a third oath being referred to. Ha Su Lomali. Why is there any necessity of teaching a third oath in the oath in the example of the Mishnah? The Gemara answers, Ha Komash Malon Chiyuvahu Deleka Ha Shvua Ika. In terms of punishment for having violated them, for having eaten the bread, so we're saying that he's not in violation. Once the first shvua precluded his eating even an olive quantity, the other shvuas do not manifest themselves, and hence when he eats the bread, he's in violation of only one oath. So as far as chiyuva, as far as punishment or obligation that results from the violation, you don't have multiple obligations. However, the shvuas exist. Now you ask, well, if there's no obligation, so what's the point in having, in making reference to the existence of the shvua? The mishkachas revocha chayla, that if space is found, if room is made for the subsequent oaths, they will take hold. That sounds a little abstract. Lamai hilchasa. What practical bearing does that have? Answer l'chida Rava. For another, in accordance with another teaching of Rava. The Yoma Rava, Shim Nishal al Harishoina, also lo shnia tachteha. This gentleman who had sworn three oaths concerning the non eating of the bread, if he were to through consulting a sage, that's nishal, and consulting a sage for the purpose of annulling the first of the three vows, the second vow would take its place, would kick in. In other words, by annulling one of the three vows, he's not home free. He'll still be bound by the subsequent vows. So that is the purpose in teaching the example of the third shvua in the Mishnah. The Gemara now has a question. It lasts a couple of lines, and then the Gemara will reject whatever we're suggesting in this question. So the question is, Lema Mesayale, can we say that the following source, Tanaic source, supports Rava? Misha Nodar Shtei Nazirus. A person vowed to observe two Nazirus periods. Unless otherwise mentioned, called the unqualified acceptance of Nazirus is a 30-day period of abstention from wine and other related restrictions. Someone accepted upon himself two Nazirios. Umana Rishayna, he observed, he counted, literally counted the first one, he observed 30 days. Vifrishalev Korban, set aside the required sacrifices that accompany the conclusion of the Nazirus period. Viachakach Nishal HaRishona, and then, before offering the sacrifices, he then sought an annulment of his Nazirus. Also lo shnia barishona, the second Nazirus, takes over, takes the place of the first one. And practically speaking, what that means is that the 30 days that he counted in abstention from wine, he has, in effect, fulfilled. And the korbanos, the sacrifices that he had set aside, he will bring them as korbanos for this second Nazirus. So what do we see from this Tanaic source? We see a concept that when there were two vows and you rescinded the first, the second one takes its place. Is that in fact not, is that not what Rava taught? The Gemara says, no, these are not parallel cases. Hachi hashta. How can you compare them? Hasam nazirus miha isa. When a person vows to accept two nazirus periods, the two are actually present. The chimoni l'rishona. After a person counts the first nazirus, boy mahadir mimna lishnia below sheila. In the event that there's no consultation with a sage to have the first one rescinded, so he counts the second one as a separate additional 30-day period. So that when the two Nazirios were accepted, they were in fact a reality to be observed as two separate 30-day periods. Haha, in the case of the vows, Shvua Shnia Mi Isa Klal, if a person vows not to eat a whole loaf of bread, and then he eats, says again the same vow, is there any manifestation whatsoever of that second vow? No, it doesn't. It doesn't have any practical application when it is made. So, if I see that in the case of the Nazirus, the double Nazirus acceptance, when you rescind the first one, the second one takes its place, I don't necessarily conclude from that, a person who had made two vows concerning the non-eating of the bread, that upon rescinding the first one, the second one would manifest itself. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a Nusei Mivne heading, where a diamond is featured. On the side we see, we've written, Shtei Deis Be'inyan HaNishba Al Kikar V'Ochla. Person swore concerning a loaf of bread not to eat it, and he went ahead and ate it. Ha'im Nitan L'Shoyul Al Shvua Zu. Is there any possible way of rescinding this vow? Im nishar min hakikar o nechal kulo. Does it matter if something is left that you haven't eaten yet? Or maybe if it's been eaten completely? Is there any room to discuss, to make reference to the rescinding of an oath that you seem to have already transgressed? As we said, we're going to see two opinions, two approaches to this matter. First, we're going to take the bird's eye approach. Let's just read a couple words of Gemara. Omar Rova, Nishba Kikar V'Ochla, Im Shir Mir Kizayis, Nishalel, Ochla Kula, Ein Nishalel. Skip to Chof Chesam and Aleph, a little more than halfway down. You see a diamond, of course, only if you have a marked Gemara, you can see this. If you don't have marked Gemaras, realize you can access them through contacting gmarkings@gmail.com. So as we said on Chof Ches Amud Aleph, a little more than halfway down, you can see a Meimar in a diamond, and he says, Afilu Omar Ochlo Kula Nishalalel. Notice the contrast between Rava, who says that if it's Ochlo Kula Ein Nishalalel, and a Meimar says, even if you ate the entire loaf, there's still room for Sheila, for having it absolved. The Gemara. Omar Rava, Nishba al Kikar, the Ochla. Person swore concerning a loaf not to eat the loaf. And he ate it. Im Shir Mimena Kazayas, if there remains an olive quantity as yet uneaten, Nishal Alel, he can have his vow annulled by consulting a sage, and the sage will be able to matir the neder, matir the shvua. Ochla kula ein nishal aleha. If he consumes the entire loaf, there's nothing left to rescind. Omar le Rav Acha brei derava leravashi heichi domi. Rav Acha asks Rav Ashi, what are the circumstances? What took place over here? Ido Omar shelo ochal. If his oath was using that expression, shelo ochal, mikizayas kamo avdei l'isure. From the first olive quantity that he ate, he violated the oath. There's seemingly saying that there's nothing left to talk about. He violated the oath already. What are you going to rescind? Ido Omar shelo ochleno. If his vow, if his oath had been using that expression, meaning he vows not to eat the entire loaf. So at what point is the oath transgressed? Down to the last morsel. If any morsel was left uneaten, he hasn't transgressed his oath yet. So my iria kizayis, why does Rava speak about the leaving of an olive quantity? We continue at the top of Daf Chof Ches. Afinu kol shehu nami. Even leaving a morsel uneaten, he still hasn't violated the oath, and it's fit to have it rescinded. So as far as Rav Acha Brei de Rava is concerned, we don't understand the circumstances under which Rava makes a distinction between leaving over a kezias as yet uneaten versus where a full kezias does not remain, where at that point he said, Rava said it cannot be rescinded. But why? The Gemara answers, Iboy Esemo Shelo Ochal, Iboy Esemo Shelo Ochleno. We'll be able to explain Rava's din either way, whether he used the expression Shelo Ochal or he used the expression Shelo Ochleno. And the Gemara now elaborates, Iboy Esemo Shelo Ochal. His vow was not to eat which would seem to be even an olive quantity. And Rava said that if an olive quantity remains at the end, this vow can be rescinded. But let's just think for a second. If you vowed not to eat, using the expression Shelo Ochal, you vowed not to eat even an olive quantity, well, then every olive quantity of bread that you eat represents a transgression. Therefore, if you left over an olive quantity at the end, there you've got an amount that is bound by the oath, don't eat it. Does it not stand to reason then that you could seek absolution of the oath regarding that last quantity? The answer is yes. So we introduce the following concept. Migu de mahanyule she'elo akazayas basra. Since she'elo, the rescission of the vow, is effective regarding that last olive quantity, mahanyule she'elo nami akazayas kamo. The absolution received will be effective even concerning the first olive quantity that you had eaten. And as a result, you are now considered exempt from having violated the oath. There is a concept that we've seen in the past, in other masichtas, and that is that a chacham, a sage, has the power when he uproots a vow, he uproots it from its origin, from the beginning. And since there was room for the absolution to take place, as we said, regarding the last kezias, it's effective. The absolution can be effective even regarding that which he already ate. And this retroactive absolution undoes, we'll say, the offense that he committed when he ate the first olive quantity. Another approach to Rava is that in fact he swore not to eat the entire loaf. So why did Rava make the absolution dependent on the leaving over of an olive quantity? Why not even less? If he left over an uneaten olive quantity of that loaf, so that has significance and worthy of being rescinded, being annulled by the sage. And if not, it's too insignificant to be eligible for rescission. Meisvei, we raise a question. Misha nodar shtei nazirus umona rishon aviv shalel korban. The very case we saw earlier. Person vowed to accept two nazirus upon himself. Upon finishing the first period, the first 30 days, he then set aside the aviv shalel korban. He set aside a sacrifice, the required sacrifices. V'achal nishala rishona. And then he rescinded the first Nazirus. And take note, as we've written in between the lines, at this point there's nothing left whatsoever of the first Nazirus. He finished all 30 days, set aside the sacrifices, and then seeks absolution of something that nothing is left of it. Also lo shnia barishana. So the second Nazirus takes the place of the first. But the main point is that there's nothing left, and yet it's subject to absolution. The Gemara responds, Hocha b'mayaskinon b'shelo kiper. The case of the Nazirus, which we said it's still subject to absolution, is talking about a case where he hadn't brought the sacrifices yet. So the fact that the sacrifices are standing there, that represents, we'll say, remaining elements of the first Nazirus. Hence, it is subject to absolution. Question. V'otanya kiper, but there's a Tanaic source that says that the absolution takes place even upon bringing the sacrifices. Even after bringing the sacrifices, it's still subject to absolution. The Gemara says, answers, b'shelo gilach, v'reb lozer hi. He may have brought his sacrifices, but he didn't cut the hair, a requirement upon the completion of a Nazirus period. And according to Rebbe Lozer, the cutting of the hair is a binding factor, without which he wouldn't be able to drink wine. He wouldn't be able to go to funerals, defile himself to the dead. So the lack of the haircut indicates that he's still within the realm of the first Nazirus. Question, V'hatanya Gilach. But there is a source that says that the rescission can take place even after he took the haircut. Namely, there's nothing left of the original Nazirus, and yet She'eva is a possibility. And you'll ask, well, what difference does it make at that point? The answer is that second Nazirus that he had taken will count. Omar Ravashi, Nazirus Koramis, are you trying to ask on Rava from the case of Nazirus? Mi goram l'shnia shelo tochul. What is it that caused the second Nazirus not to have been counted, that it didn't take hold? Rishona, it's the first Nazirus that prevented the second one from taking hold. Vieina, well, it is now no longer. In order to really appreciate what we just said, we look together at the Rashi, a few lines up. Omar of Ashi, Nazirus Karamis, Li'oilam, Misha'ovar al Shvuaso, Lo Chazio le She'elo, Velo Mahanyo lo She'elo. As Rava said, when you violate the Shvua, it's no longer subject to being rescinded. And seeking absolution by the sage isn't going to help you. Udekashiloch Nazirus. You'll ask, well, in the case of the Nazirus, it seems that the Nazirus is gone, and yet you're able to seek absolution. Lav kushi, it's not a question. Rashi continues, Mi goram lishnia shalotochu klomar. Mi goram loch loimar. What is it that caused you by the Nazirus to say, Shayomim hamenuyim, the days that you counted? He counted 30 days in observation of his Nazirus. What caused you to say that those days, lo lishniya ninu elo lirishona, that those days counted not for the second one, but for the first nazirus? The tema, that now you're coming with the claim, also lo rishona, after you counted the 30 days, there's nothing left for you to rescind the tikshilach, and then that was the basis of your question. So what is it that caused those first 30 days not to be counted toward the second? Rishoyna hoysa goremes loch lomar kain. It's the first nazirus that he accepted that he had to observe, and he had to observe them. So of course those 30 days that you already counted were for the first nazirus, preventing the second nazirus from taking effect. Now, we saw in the source that after he counted the 30 days, and we saw even after he brought the sacrifices and after he took the haircut, he can go to the Chochem and have it rescinded. V'eino, v'haregilo ha-chochem loch. Rashi continues, what going to the sage accomplishes is that he reveals to you, she-charotase shel-zeh charota, that your expression of regret concerning that first nazirus is a real regret. The okar es harishoino meikora, that in effect uproots the first nazirus from its roots, from its outset. The nimsa minyan hamonu shel shnia nimnu. The result is that the counting that you did observe is accounting toward the second nazirus. Fekula rishona akate havakaimo kishenishal. When you came to the sage after having observed the first 30 days, you had a block. What were you coming with? You were coming with a block of 30 days that you had observed. So the first nazirus is still extant in that sense, that you have, to your credit, so to speak, you have on record 30 observed days. When you go to the Chacham, you're in effect saying, you know, those 30 observed days, I regret having observed them. I regret having observed them for that first Nazirus. So you have the first Nazirus is extant as far as we are concerned. Avokikor shenishba leh viochla, but a loaf of bread that you swore not to eat and you ate it, al korchach ovar lo shvuoso, v'shuvein lo shela. Look, you've violated the oath, and there's nothing left to be shoylon, to rescind. So that through this amazingly detailed analysis that Rashi gives in explaining the Gemara, we see a clear difference between the case of the loaf and the case of the Nazirus. And in the final analysis, just like in the case of Nazirus, when you approached the Chacham after having observed the first Nazirus, you were really approaching him with a significant element, a significant entity of the first Nazirus right there. So there was what to be shoyal on, and that was manifest in the block of 30 days that you had to your credit, that you observed. In order to draw a parallel between that and the case of the loaf, you would have to have a kazayas of uneaten bread in order for you to have something left to be shoyal on. Not so if all of the bread was consumed. Ameimar Omar, and as we pointed out before, Ameimar is a second approach to this situation of a person having vowed not to eat a loaf, then ate it. And he says, Afilu ochla kulu nishalaleh, even if he ate the entire loaf, he can still have the vow rescinded. And so you ask, what's there left to be shoyal on? If he ate the loaf unintentionally, not realizing that it was subject to the vow, so we know that a person would have to bring a sacrifice in the case of the shogeg violation. So he hasn't brought the sacrifice yet. So the sacrifice represents that which is left, even though he ate the entire loaf. There's something left yet to be shoyal on, to have rescinded. And being that that's the case, so he can be shoyal on the entire oath. E bemazid, if we're talking about someone who had violated the oath knowingly and ate the bread knowingly, knowing that he's violating his oath, nevertheless, he can be shoyal on it. Mechusar malchus, he is still awaiting the lashing penalty. So there's something left, so to speak, in that sense, the lashing. Avol koftu ala amud lo. Kiddush Shmuel. If, however, this person who had knowingly violated his oath and ate the loaf, and they tied him to the pole where he is to be lashed, at that point, he cannot rescind, he cannot be shoyal, he cannot annul the vow. Based on Shmuel's teaching. The Omar Shmuel, Koftu ala Omud, Verotz, Mibezdin Potter. Shmuel tells us, as you can see in Maseches Makis, that if a person who was guilty of lashing was tied to the pole in the court where the lashing takes place, and he then ran out of the court, he is exempt. He is no longer subject to the lashing. So that as far as a Maimar is concerned, once he's tied to the pole, it's already too late. It's as if the lashing has already been done. So that at that point in time, as Koftu al-Amud, there's no longer what to be shoyal on. There's nothing left to be the basis of an annulment. The lohi. And this last point is not true. We thought that Koftu al-Amud is the equivalent of having already received the lashes. But they're not. That's not the case. Hasam, in the case of Shmuel, Shmuel's teaching, ruts. Not only was he tied to the Amud, he was tied and then he somehow escaped and ran out of the court. That running out of the court is very disparaging to the convict, to the guilty one, and it's the running out of court, the bizoyon that he, the disparagement that he experiences, that in effect serves as the equivalent of being lashed. And this is based on a pasuk, and Rashi quotes the pasuk. So the tying to the pole in and of itself is not the equivalent of having been lashed. It's the running out of court that serves to fulfill that capacity. Hacha lo rots, in what Amemar described of merely being tied to the pole in anticipation of being lashed, he didn't run out of the court yet. So that doesn't constitute the equivalent of lashing. So that it would seem then from here that even if he were tied to the pole in anticipation of the lashing, he's still in the position to have the oath, the shvua, be absolved through a chacham. Exactly how to apply this in an actual sense needs to be researched, because what we seem to be saying is that you have a person who knowingly violated an oath and is awaiting lashing and can get away with it, so to speak, by seeking absolution through a Torah scholar. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.